Welcome to the Automate and Grow podcast, brought to you by Cloud Advisory.
All right. Welcome to another episode of Automate and Grow. This is episode 15, and I'm here today with my friend Steven from Fair Claims. And they're doing some really interesting stuff around arbitration and dispute resolution. Did I get your company name right?
You got it right.
Okay, sure. Making sure. I've made a few mistakes on these, so I want to make sure. They're doing really interesting things around the enterprise and providing a platform for dispute resolution. So, Steven, I appreciate you joining me today and to talk about kind of your startup journey and what Fair Claims is doing. So I appreciate you jumping on today.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So Fair Claims is basically like a SaaS platform that allows enterprises to have a forum really to resolve disputes that might normally go to small claims court. So maybe I'm curious, like, how you came up with this idea and how you guys got started.
So I'm a lawyer by background and represented small businesses and startups for over 7 years after having been at a big law firm and in-house counsel and done business and been at a legal tech company, Lex Machina, which sold to LexisNexis, one of the top legal tech companies, and did sales there and have done business and seen law and disputes from a lot of different angles. And when I was in practice for on my own, I kept getting calls from people with small disputes. They were typically $2,000-$3,000. And oftentimes they were unpaid invoices, small breach of contract matters. I got a lot of landlord tenant security deposit cases. So even though I represented businesses, hear from individuals, even though I didn't really hold myself out as a real estate or individual claimant attorney. And I would get maybe 3, 4, 5 calls like this a month, sometimes just a couple, but never none. And it got me thinking about it, you know, that I would oftentimes when, you know, a lot of times people call a lawyer, they don't think about how much it costs to hire a lawyer for handling a dispute. And so, by the time they pay me my retainer, they would have paid me double or maybe about the same as what their dispute was. And so I would explain that to them and they'd be disappointed because, you know, you just think, call a lawyer, let's see what we can do. And I would recommend they go to small claims court to resolve their dispute. And you could hear it in their voice. They just didn't want to do it, you know. And I got thinking about that. And I think it's for good reason. I've spent time in small claims court, especially now with Fair Claims. And you have to learn a new system that you're not familiar with if you've never done it. You've got to file paperwork, serve it on the other side, go in person, take time off work or you know, from being at home, drive an hour, half hour, whatever, park, spend 2, 3, 4 hours, sometimes longer waiting for your hearing time, sometimes only to be turned away to come back because there wasn't enough time to hear your case. Sometimes then there may be an appeal, et cetera, right? So it's a lot of effort. And so most people would just ditch their claims. And so I thought, well, there's got to be a better way. In law school, I'd read about online dispute resolution. It's not a new idea. And I had read about it and I thought, look, this is 2014 when I first started thinking about this. There's got to be a solution by now. And I couldn't find one. And when I couldn't find one, I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I just got totally obsessed with it. I knew there was a need, knew that it was an important problem, and just kept researching. And the more I researched, the more I thought about solutions and saw opportunity to do something.
Wow, that's really interesting. And had you been involved in software startups before, or did you have
Lex Machina is the closest involvement where we provided an IP analytics. Now they do other areas of law, but an analytics platform for attorneys to make decisions.
Hmm.
And machine learning that was way ahead of its time, right?
Oh,
so they started
doing
machine learning in maybe 10 years ago, actually, by this point. And so I was involved with that and then some other software companies, and I tried my hand at a couple other startups.
And then so you were familiar, you had kind of, because you're obviously a lawyer, I'm curious what your adjustment was to having to then go and build a product.
So I had done it before, and I think it would have been really difficult if I hadn't. But I had, you know, in college and out of college, I tried my hand at a couple startups. So I went to Stanford from 96 to 2000. And grew up in this industry. I mean, really,
right.
Grew up right. It formed right there in front of us. And a lot of my friends had business plans or executive summaries at the time. That was a big thing, right? Instead of PowerPoints.
Right. You might not even need that anymore.
Yeah. Now you might not even need that. And they, and they all, you know, a lot of them got involved in the startup tech industry, whether working at Google or other companies that started around that time. I mean, I remember when Google first started in 1998, you walk down University Avenue and there was like on the street, you see just like their logo in kind of color on the street, Google.
Oh,
and there was a lot of buzz around them, and they were in the same office as, it was Google, then PayPal, then Facebook had the same office. It's like the good luck. Like, you have to get that office, right? It's,
oh my goodness.
On the university. So anyway, a lot of my friends started companies, and myself included. So I had built product a few times, both with a couple times with my own startup and then at a few different companies.
Interesting. So did you have a co-founder that was a technical co-founder? Did you build a team somewhere else? Like, how did you approach that?
I had nothing. I had nothing. I was, you know, and I don't think, and most people didn't understand why I was excited about this idea. And certainly, even if they did, were really bored by it, right? It's like, look, I'm going to do arbitration online. They, like, their eyes glazed over. It took me, like, even the woman I was dating at the time, like, she didn't want to hear about it, which stopped. It took me, you know, months to figure out how to even make it somewhat interesting to anybody. And think it through. So no, I it was tough at first to recruit anybody to get involved. So I decided, you know, in having been in tech, I knew that if you want to get engineers involved, you got to have traction. And so I set out to do that. And the first site I did was on Weebly, and it was like words. Like, it was just, you know, spit out whatever I was thinking in my brain onto a website with way too many, like, I was being a lawyer about it, like, words, you know.
Oh my goodness. And so your proof of concept was a Weebly website?
Absolutely.
Damn. Okay. So you kind of, like, you almost manually handed disputes, so they both, like, kind of entered their deal? And
well, so the Weebly, I didn't even handle disputes on. I just wanted to get feedback. I was like,
oh,
all right,
I see.
Feedback. Let me put it out in the universe. Let me start calling people to find out if they're going to use it. And I just called, like, anybody who I thought might be interested in using it, you know, so, like, dry cleaners, you know, building property managers who might have security deposit disputes, whatever, small businesses, somebody who owned a jewelry company. I called everybody. And I spent like a year doing that. So I spent 6 months incubating the idea. Then I built the Weebly site, got feedback from friends and family. Then I spent a year, like, calling everybody who I thought might use it. And in between, I built a Squarespace site. And that's where I started handling disputes manually. And I got my first couple of customers who were sharing economy customers, one of whom was Turo.
And just Turo, so people that don't know, Turo is basically allowing me, for example, as a vehicle owner, I can rent my car out on the Turo platform.
Yeah, and they just raised $100 million. And, you know, they've been around a while and have disputes sometimes, and they want to do right by their customers, right? And so we work with companies who they want to do right by their customers, and sometimes it's helpful to have this independent, neutral third party take a look at things.
So if I have a dispute, how does it work? Like, am I subscribing to your platform, and then I'm using that to set up, like, a two-sided arbitration? Or take me through it, like, if I'm a new customer.
Yeah, so we have a couple components, right? One component is the digital arbitration piece, and another component is FairChat, a smart settlement tool where you can resolve disputes with another party, pretty much do it yourself, and then bring a mediator in on demand. Smart settlement tool with predictive analytics and AI and all the good buzzwords. But before that, it's a workflow tool for these companies we work with to manage their disputes. And the way it usually happens is, you know, let's say you have a dispute with a company. You call their customer support line. They try to resolve it with one or two touches. That's great. You know, our companies resolve most of their disputes themselves. We handle the, like, 10% hardest disputes where, you know, you're trying to resolve it with a customer, or you have two sides of a marketplace and you're trying to get them to resolve their issue. Like, somebody came to my home to install flooring and they didn't finish the job, or they damaged my couch or my antique furniture or whatever, right? They try to resolve it at first. We take the ones where they're not making any progress, and we take the toughest ones. And they'll just submit a claim into our system super quick. We have API tools, right? We're building out more integration, but they submit it. Then an email goes out to the customer who is making the complaint. So it's either between a customer and the company or between a customer and the other side of the marketplace, the supply side. Once the customer signs up, the claimant, the first party, they'll invite the other party. Once they both sign up, it's on, and they can do digital arbitration with a video hearing where they can speak to an arbitrator who's an attorney within 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks. And they can do, or the Fair Chat tool, which is the smart settlement tool, within a week or less.
So it's all binding. You're using digital tools to basically deliver it without people having to move around. Is it, and it's quicker than me going through small claims and maybe simpler.
Oh, God. Small claims court in California might take 2 to 3 months and is really complicated in terms of filing all the paperwork and everything, like I mentioned. And this is like, you could do it from anywhere. We've had people stationed overseas in the military participate in a hearing, you know, and win. And then,
wow, okay.
That, and there's no way he would have ever been able to do anything about his claim because he wasn't even here in the U.S. and win and get paid. And most of our claimants, they get paid because a lot of times a respondent opts in and volunteers, and psychologically they're bought in, which we love. You know, other people have done hearings from their phone. When, not that it's, it's dangerous, but while they're driving, while they're,
while they're working. This never happened.
Yeah. I mean, we actually have, so many people were doing it while they were driving. We had to put in a little disclaimer.
Oh my God, that's funny. That's interesting.
that's legal history. You know, that's never happened before.
Well, I think, you know, you always think of, you know, people who are scheduled for jury duty or, you know, anything. If you have to, you know, I've been to small claims courts one or two times in my life, but you're like, oh, it conflicts with something in my life. But what you're describing is, now I don't have to worry about that. But it sounds like the biggest benefit is just the speed with which you're able to engage in arbitration. And then also, like, are you finding that what's the feedback on the big wins for customers, that why they're buying into this?
It's speed, it's convenience, and it's much less expensive overall. I mean, small claims court's not expensive, but depending on your other option. But it's a lot of it's speed and convenience, and also fairness, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just straight up fairness. So I'll tell you a story. We have we talk to our end users every week, and one of our end users went through a platform, a marketplace, where she hired somebody to do some home improvement services, and there was a dispute, and I forget what the exact nature of the dispute was, and we keep it all confidential anyway. But, you know, she had this $4,000 dispute, and she brought it to the marketplace, and they sent her our way, and she signed up, and the other side signed up too, because, you know, they want to resolve it and move on too, right? They're busy business owners, and the marketplaces we work with encourage them in a lot of different ways, and we use different carrots and sticks to bring people to the table. But they resolved it. She won, and she got paid. Now, she said that her friend hired the same contractor, but outside of that marketplace, just separately, independently, had the same exact dispute come up. I think it was like,
wow,
like that. He took the money and didn't show up to do the work, which happens sometimes.
Wow.
Like,
Even through a platform. And so what people realize, we're talking about a platform. You're saying like a Handy or a Thumbtack or those types of platforms where it's a two-sided marketplace connecting
exactly,
you know, some sort of freelancer with some sort of customer.
Yeah, and Angie's List type. You see all Angie's the commercials List. You can hire. Yeah. So her friend hired someone, just the same person independently, had to hire an attorney, you know, had to file, like, send a letter, spend money on the attorney. When I spoke to this woman, hadn't gotten her money back, right? This woman had been paid. She said two things that I'll always remember that keep us really motivated. One is, I'll always use this platform. She's like, I'll always use this platform going forward to hire anybody because I know it's like insurance. You have my back. They have my back, you know, because Fair Claims had my back. And number two, she doesn't trust the local. She lives in Wisconsin, and I don't know anything about the local scene there, but she doesn't trust the local court to do it right.
Interesting.
It's all about who you know, and it the court's for the powerful. And so she trusted us versus the courts.
So if I'm an entrepreneur, I'm building a two-sided marketplace, part of my model should be, it sounds like, to incorporate a platform like this. And I think you'd mentioned that people are incorporating it into, like, their customer agreement or their, you know, the contract that they're using with.
Yeah, companies we work with are starting to do that, put us in their terms of service, because you can sort of make this process mandatory. Businesses of all stripes are doing it, and it's absolutely a way to get fast and inexpensive dispute resolution, right? So if you're a contractor, for example, and someone owes you 10 grand, you have a lot of bad options, but if you included us, you can get it resolved in 3 weeks for like a few $100, and that's it.
So when I'm quoting the customer and then they're signing the terms and services, you're saying, and that's an interesting case. Like, it doesn't have to be a digital business. It could be any contractor, anyone delivering a professional service or a freelance type service. You could bake that in that, hey, listen, if there's a dispute, it's going to be resolved through this platform.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. We found that sharing economy marketplaces are the best early adopters for us, you know, because of their specific needs and a great learning bed for us to figure out different use cases and industries. But really, this is for anybody with any kind of dispute, and the real world has as many as anything.
So are you finding that most of your customers, it sounds like you have a direct model where you're going out to these marketplaces to try and pitch them on the idea of incorporating this into their workflow. How are you finding customers, and like what's that process been like?
It's all been direct sales so far. Plus, we do an event series called Trust on Demand, where we get sharing economy executives together for panels and networking and learnings. We sponsor events like Marketplace Risk, which is a really outstanding event happening in May, one of the best sharing economy events in the country.
Marketplace
Risk. And it's just, you know, it's a small community, right? I mean, there are maybe 300 sharing economy marketplaces. There are maybe 40 that are big enough to use us because they have enough volume of disputes that it makes sense. So we've just gotten to know them all, and it's all, and so from the beginning, when I was testing this concept out with different verticals, you know, I mentioned like I reached out to like U-Haul and dry cleaners and every vertical I could think of, and it was sharing economy execs who got back to me right away on cold emails when I had a Squarespace site. So I said, oh
interesting.
I think there's something here. Yeah.
That's so, it sounds like, you know, number one, because they're tech savvy and they get the fact that they're disrupting a marketplace by building an app or a two-sided marketplace that's a platform, they kind of get the fact that you're kind of doing the same in the legal dispute side. So it's like a really win-win. That's interesting.
That's the thing. Yeah, they're more open-minded, relatively speaking, and they're more patient. And they also, the other nice thing is they really get product. And obviously we work hard to delight them and their users, but they've been part of our product development process because they really get product.
So has this been smooth sailing so far, or what's kind of some of the big challenges you've had to deal with?
No way. You know, it's interesting. The biggest challenge in the first place was, like I said, getting people's attention. They would get bored because it's like this legal thing. So I figured out how to do that by saying small claims court online or Judge Judy online. That was actually that challenge was like for the first 6 to 9 months. I didn't even know how to talk about it. Then the next challenge was getting investors interested because I had to learn how to tell the story. I think I think every founder thinks what they're doing is highly unique and more complicated than other companies, but we really are in a very unique space, you know, and a space that isn't sexy and one that is a long story. And so I had to figure out how to tell the story. And within that, what I didn't realize, what I didn't have an appreciation for is, to me, the market opportunity was obvious. It's like, this is like going to be the biggest thing ever. You know,
that makes sense.
To them, they didn't see the biggest feedback for the first like year that I was raising money, when I was raising angel money, was, oh, we don't think it's a big enough market. And I was like, are you kidding me?
What? Really? Oh, that's interesting. That was some of the feedback.
That was the main feedback. We don't think it's a big enough market. And that's just like the opposite of what is true. It's like a $500 billion market in the U.S., you know, because there's a shadow market of people that don't file disputes. 0.5% of all transactions result in disputes. But I had to figure out how to tell that story in an investor, in a way that appealed to investors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I told the story starting off with, here's my pilot plan and how we're gonna build this small thing and validate and then blow it up bigger. And I met with a founder friend of mine, Matt Polson, who founded Omaze, who's a classmate of mine in college. Was very candid in a great way, right? Because you need to like hear candid truths when you're doing something like this. He said, look, man, you're telling the story the opposite way. You need to start with the big vision and you need to show them why it's a big market. And he also said, and your deck is ugly.
Oh no. So like, the pitch deck was not great.
Yeah, he's like, your pitch deck is ugly. You know,
Omaze is kind of an interesting platform, right? So he probably had some experience there because it's like not something obvious that you would think would be something that would raise money, right? It's like a way to like raise, correct me if I'm wrong, and this is off topic, but Omaze is like a platform that allows you to what? Get funding for projects with special offers? Is it kind of like a crowdfunded with celebrities,
they do,
right?
They do charity contests. Yeah, I think that's about right. They do charity contests. They get celebrities to offer unique experiences in exchange for, and I don't know legally how they set it up, but some sort of charity raffle.
That's so
you pay $5 to $10 and with a chance to meet George Clooney.
That's what I thought. Okay. Yeah. Oh, so that's a friend of yours from school. That's interesting.
Matt is a friend of mine and a great entrepreneur. And, you know, I mean, he, in his case, he raised $1 million with an idea, but it was a different time. You know, like everything changed after 2013.
Well, then that's kind of what I was thinking. I'm like, well, if you can't learn from a better guy than that to pitch, like, I don't know how I would have pitched Omaze.
You know, it was a different time. Is like, and also he had the great background for it, and I think also was great at telling his story.
Right,
like, you know, his advice resonated with me. Yeah.
So, what are some of the, you know, you're trying to scale this up, obviously, and you might have then just based on who your customers are and how they're growing. What's the limitations of the platform? It sounds like there's still a need for an arbitrator, but you also have like an automated thing, and you kind of alluded that maybe you're building something around AI, and I'm curious what that'll look like.
Yeah. Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, humans should always be involved in matters of justice, due process, fairness, and dispute resolution in some way, shape, or form, at least for some part of the funnel, okay? Because AI can do a lot of things, but there is no replacement for human wisdom, and there never will be. Absolutely never will. I don't care how smart AI gets. There's human wisdom that is different, more complex, more advanced, you know, and AI will never get there, or maybe in 1,000 years, but really.
You think so? Really that far out?
Who knows? I mean, look, I don't know. I mean, in terms of catching up with the human brain that's evolved for hundreds of thousands of years that, you know.
Has a lot of junk in there too, though, right?
Well,
there's
but
stuff
good
that junk holds us that. Back.
Yeah, we have. So, yeah. So like
dinosaur
one of the,
brain.
That's true. I mean, one of the issues is human beings can have bias or human beings can. But life experience is special that right. I don't care how smart a robot is in experiencing things. I just think it's different and we're more advanced and wisdom is something a robot can't do. So what we do is we augment. We use AI and we use predictive analytics to help make people smarter and make decisions about settlements, for example. So we have a fair chat tool where we have an AI mediator that tees things up that's going to get smarter over time and get contextual at, you know, telling people, for example, how to think about proving up their case, you know, not legal advice, but high level advice on how to present what you're doing to the other side and how to make your claims and things like that. Non-legal advice, right? Important to make that distinction. But and then on the other side, have predictive analytics that makes recommendations on offers like a kayak tool where, hey, we've seen these, a lot of these types of disputes and here's what they often resolve at based on what you're saying. And so, like TurboTax, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's suggesting outcomes of, based upon similar scenarios. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Like a decision support tool, basically.
The decision support tool. And so we augment in every way. We augment CSRs at companies we work with because they can be more efficient with the disputes they're handling because they could use our tool to manage their workflow and to get through the really tricky part of the dispute process. And they're no longer the bad guy in terms of one-on-one with someone who's complaining. They bring in a third party that takes off some of the burden. They're able to focus more on their other claims and spend more time on them and resolve more claims quickly. We've reduced a lot of our customers' claims by like 2/3.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. That's a big difference.
Huge.
So is there a limitation based upon your ability to hire arbitrators? Like, or is that because that's an official legal position, right? Or if, I don't know if you've run into that. I'm just kind of curious.
Well, it's interesting. You don't have to be a lawyer to be an arbitrator, actually. You can just sort of hold yourself out as an arbitrator. There's no set licensing requirement.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, most people don't. And there's some and I didn't know that before getting into it. There's some states that require some basic certificates.
Like paralegal.
But otherwise, you can pretty much just say, I'm an arbitrator, and if both parties agree to abide by what I say, then that's it.
No way. Oh, wow. So you can kind of make arbitrators on the fly and give them a framework. And
totally. So so in the long run, there's no issue with supply.
Interesting.
In fact,
I had no idea. I don't know why I thought. I had just assumed that that would be an actual official legal certified sort of role.
Well, most arbitrators are former judges.
Okay.
You know, for big arbitration companies that are handling disputes between Microsoft and Apple or whatever.
That makes sense.
But we're creating a new market, and these are what we get attorneys who have been arbitrators at the big arbitration companies, but also who are stay-at-home parents with 10, 15, 20 years legal experience and do great with these small claims, right?
So is this like the other side of the market? Are you actually like creating opportunities for people that want to be arbitrators?
Yeah, no, I mean, every lawyer wants to be a judge. They love working with us. They see fascinating cases that are on the cutting edge of law, right? Because they work with sharing economy companies with new legal questions coming up. So one of our arbitrators got to work on a case where there's unsettled law on the value of the data on your laptop, right? So if someone steals your laptop and the laptop's worth $500, but you're saying, yeah, but I had ideas on there and IP and data worth $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
There's unsettled, it's like conflicting law. And well, what do you do about that data?
I never thought of that. That's an interesting area. So if, in other words, if someone adds an arbitrator to a case, that's an opportunity for someone to make money that's an arbitrator.
Totally. Yeah.
Opportunity. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I had no idea. That's really... And then, so I could go, if I want to be an arbitrator with you guys, do I have to get hired or I can just like put, do people choose the arbitrator? How does that work? Is it like a marketplace for arbitrators?
At some point, we'll probably open up the platform, but for now, it's, we vet them, right?
Like
and
curated.
We take 7% of arbitrators. We're very tough. We do mock hearings. We like run them through the ringer. We only get the very best, you know, great experience, great EQ, can control a hearing.
That's kind of your customer experience probably right now too on both sides.
It's everything.
How fair and how good the arbitrator is.
Are they a good listener? Because that's a big part of it is people want to feel heard, right? That's a big part of due process.
I want to be conscious of your time. I have three things that I'll touch on before we wrap up. One is you didn't stay in San Francisco. You ended up in LA. How did you end up in LA and what's going on in LA as far as startups?
Well, LA's home to me, and I wanted to get back home. That's really what it was. And I got tired of San Francisco. I think it's like, you know, there's such thing as too much of a good thing. It's like the startup community consumes everything there. And what I love about the LA tech community is that there are other people from other walks of life and other industries influencing what we do. And then the third wave economy, when we're impacting old school industry, I think it's a better place to be going forward. And so I just basically wanted to get home. But I think it's also just a special time in LA tech. I mean, look at Bird. They just got $15 million in funding to take on transportation with their e-scooters. Snapchat's here.
I see those all over Santa Monica when I go down there. They're like, people are leaving these random scooters, and I'm wondering what's going on. And I realize this is a business.
That's, you know what it is? Pure fun.
I might have to, like, connect with them somehow.
Yeah.
Awesome. So I'll wrap up with two questions. The one that I usually ask at the end is – how are you changing the world?
If Fair Claims is successful, we're going to have a dramatic impact on the world and the world economy because disputes hold people back in their personal lives. They're stressful. It takes a psychological toll. It could be the difference between paying rent or not. We're going to dramatically change whether or not people trust the system because we're designing a new tool that opens up the system for 90% of people who can't afford an attorney. And all these disputes that are creating friction in business are going to be resolved 10 times quicker than ever before and even quicker. And so we're opening up economic possibilities in new ways. You're freeing people's time and resources to do something productive versus resolving disputes. So as far as I'm concerned, Amazon gets your packages there quicker. Well, when you talk about real world economic impact, I think Fair Claims is going to have more impact than that if we're successful.
That's incredible, and I can totally see that. That makes a lot of sense. So the final thing I'll wrap up on is when we have interesting guests on, we ask those interesting guests to refer someone else and nominate someone that you know and that you'd be willing to introduce us to that should also appear in Automate and Grow. We talk to usually experts or entrepreneurs in either digital innovation or, you know, automating marketing, sales, support. So I'm curious, like who, and usually your first answer is your best answer. So who would you nominate to appear on Automate and Grow and who would you introduce us to?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, for whatever reason, the first person that comes to mind is my friend, Justin Wolski, who has an education tech, edutech software platform, an e-learning solution, but who's also a thought leader with Grid 110, which is an organization I'm involved with, where we're helping build up the LA tech ecosystem and thinks deeply about tech in LA and about just augmenting learning experiences. So I guess from that perspective, he's automating learning.
Yeah, for sure.
He could be an interesting person to have on.
And that is an area that, if anyone knows me, and I probably leaks out on this podcast, I think education needs major immediate disruptions. So I'm very interested. So Justin, right?
Yeah, Justin, he's doing some cool work. Happy to introduce you.
Justin, you've been nominated to appear on an episode of Automate and Grow, so we will follow up on that. Thank you very much, Stephen. I really appreciate you being on. I'm really excited about what you guys are doing, and I look forward to meeting you in person at some point.
Likewise. Thanks for having me. This
no,
was fun.
No problem. So this has been episode 15 of Automate and Grow, and we will see everybody on episode 16.
This has been an episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. Check out other episodes for interesting topics on how to grow, innovate, and automate your business. Subscribe or like us on iTunes, YouTube, Google Play, or on our website at www.automategrow.biz and get your copy of the book Automate and Grow at Amazon today.